It's the final days to make the first entry deadline for Mumbrella's ComsCon Awards. It's been a big year for Australia and New Zealand's PR and communications industry. Now is the time to take a moment and reflect on your accomplishments and reward your team for their hard work. Enter for your chance to be recognised for pushing boundaries, driving successful campaigns, using innovative strategies and moving the industry forward. Enter by Friday, 18th of February to save $100.
Welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Callum Jaspin, and joining me to break down Australia's media and marketing industry this week is the Deputy and Acting Editor, Andrew Banks.
Hello, Callum.
Welcome back, Banksy, to the podcast, and Senior Reporter, Emma Shepherd.
Hello.
Later in the episode, I will be joined by Pete Bosolkowski, CEO and founder of new agency It's Friday. During our conversation, we'll be speaking about the new agency's proposition, why startup opportunities are potentially geared towards men, if indies are the new way forward, and reflections and insights from his past few years leading holdco agencies. But before we get to that, we need to talk about some news. Banksy, give us today's menu.
Yes, Callum, I'm pretty impressed with the lineup you've pulled together this week. First up is CHE Proximity's rebrand to CHEP Network, with the CEO, Justin Hind, taking the agency forward after his first year at the driving seat. And then we'll be previewing the year ahead in the TV ratings war after a hotly contested 2021 between 9 and 7.
CHE Proximity this week officially rebranded to CHEP Network, rolling out what the Clemenger Group agency says is the new agency model. The rebrand was teased last Friday, reported on Mumbrella, with the official details holding out for this morning on recording day being Wednesday's wider release. The move is said to be supporting the agency's evolution, with CHEP splitting up its 11 different offerings, essentially untangling what is and has been Australia's single largest full-service agency. CEO Justin Hind, who's going to be joining us in just a second, said that following the changes of the past 2 years, it's caused them to reimagine the business for the new economy that has emerged, and quote, the development of a new agency model that will ensure creativity, media, technology, and data is at the heart of supporting our clients' continued growth. Now, all this comes after a fairly turbulent 2 years, not only for CHEP itself, but Clemenger Group more generally. Throughout the 2010s, Clemenger Group was a powerhouse of Australian advertising, with both Clemenger BBDO and CHEP scooping up awards left, right and centre, led by the respective bosses Nick Garrett at Clemenger Melbourne and Chris Howardson at CHEP, both tipped to succeed Robert Morgan in the top job in the group. CHEP is the, as I mentioned, largest full service offering in the country. It was seen as being ahead of the mark and the potential envy of its competitors, with the ongoing trend of holdcos right now trying to bring in integrated offerings for their clients. Both have since left, with Howardson and Ant White setting up shop together before promptly rebranding themselves following White's departure a few months later. This came several months after the group implemented pay cuts, enforcing leave and job cutting worth around $24.5 million in savings across 2020, reported in Mumbrella last year, this applying to the start of 2020 period when COVID came in. The group then refused to initially pay back the staff and then posted subsequent bumper profits. This also came within the context of its agencies bringing in new business and also taking subsidies from the government JobKeeper program. Last year, the group announced a pay rise for those who experienced job cuts across that same period. The whole saga is understood to have been a contributing factor for Howardson's subsequent departure during this period. Also, Clemenger BBDO saw Gail Wye appointed CEO before then departing after a short stint with Jim Gole, later replacing her in Melbourne. The Sydney Outpost recently saw the departure of Pete Bosolkowski, who we'll be getting to later, and he was last month replaced by Dentsu Creative's Brent Kirby. Hind himself has been in the role for just over a year now, with new Chief Creative Officer Gavin McLeod joining him shortly after. It does appear that in terms of style, Hind and Howardson differ, and I'm sure that will come through with the way the agency is run now, as signalled through this rebranding. A few sources have suggested that in terms of capabilities, potentially not that much will change or was needed to be changed, seeing as CHEP was already representing one of the more future-facing models across the industry. but for the last 12 months for Hind, it's been about stabilizing and consolidating a very large business. And what the rebranding does do, if anything, is mark a fork in the road for the agency. Moving forward, the industry is aware that Howardson's 12-month non-compete is up, so no doubt he'll be gunning for some of the business that was won under his tenure. While some of this is not directly related to this week's announcement, it does represent a shift and potential new era for Clemenger Group. With rumours going on from Global that further changes may be on their way. Hopefully we can get the answer to some of these questions for you as CEO of CHEP Network, Justin Hind, joins me now. Hi, Justin. Great to welcome you to the podcast today.
Thanks, Callum. Great to be here. Big day for us, but great to be here.
Yeah, big day indeed. So you've officially repositioned yourself to CHEP Network around a year or so after you took on the role. Has this move in particular been a long time coming, or was it maybe sort of as a response to the last couple of years?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. You know, I came into the role officially in December 2020 and kicking off, you know, early in 2021. One of the things Rob Morgan asked was, could you have a look and see what you think the next era of CHEP should be? And, you know, CHEP's a big business, a powerful business, hugely successful. So, you know, we thought long and hard about what is the right thing to do. And our executive team sat down and we looked at everything that we'd done and where we'd been and, more importantly, where we were going. We did lots of research in the market. We listened a lot. And we thought that, you know, it was a good time for two reasons. One, you know, the changes in the business. And secondly, the changes in the economy and wider society. So this move to the CHEP Network being in and around new economy creativity and our purpose being to be a positive force in the new economy just felt right. So it's a long piece of work. It probably took us about 7 months to get to today, but we're grateful of all the energy and effort that people have put in to get us here.
From my initial, take on the situation, it seems as though it's somewhat of going against the global trend of an aggregation of services. CHEP was always kind of seen as being the envy of these other groups with kind of having that full service model and offering across, you know, these 11 different services which you've listed. Is this a response to that and kind of being ahead of what might next be the model? Is sort of untangling that?
Well, we're not really focused on untangling that. For those clients, the very large enterprise clients that would like us to do everything, I talk about threading the needle. If they'd like us to thread the needle through 10 or 11 services, we're going to do that all day long, and that is the power of CHEP. On the flip side, though, when we came into the business, we probably thought that a lot of those services didn't have the same amount of oxygen or air cover or recognition in the market. And really, this move to a network model is the best of what CHEP is known for, but also being able to be responsive to those clients that want to be a little bit more nimble, or if they want to turn different services on and off. It's really responsive to that change that we're seeing, as well as looking at not only at large enterprise-sized clients, but mid-market. Mid-market's a very large part of the economy, and particularly the advertising industry, and we're adapting, I would say, to both ends of that spectrum. If you want us to do everything, we'll do it all day long. If you want us just to do tech or just media or just CX, we'll do that happily as well.
So one thing that comes to mind is sort of the offering which Bastion brought together last year, going from Bastion Collective to now Bastion with all their services underneath. Will you have a sort of similar offering to that? I mean, in terms of will there be a lead or a GM for each of the different offerings? I understand Bastion have CEOs in place. Obviously, you're still more of that kind of agency model.
Yeah, we're lucky. We run as one national team and we have an ELT, and that is comprised of the discipline leads and our managing partners and client partners. So we already have a level of seniority and recognition within the business that they come together and they operate singularly at the same time. And you know, Mike Dean and the team there have done a very good job with CHEP Media. Mark Gretton and his team there, we've got a very large tech business. They've done a fantastic job on that too, of having the ability to service all of CHEP and then have large-scale clients on their own. So, again, it's best of both worlds. It's responding to what the market wants.
And in terms of, I guess, one of the worries would be that you move away from that sort of fully village-type setup and maybe it does go into these sort of silos. How, from a culture perspective, do you think you can, I guess, manage that?
Yeah, well, I think culturally we don't really have any silos. We have disciplines. Yeah. And the nature of the way that we challenge and answer briefs for clients is one of collective thought and collective leadership. The collaboration that I've seen amongst the leaders of our business is absolutely fantastic, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah. And I guess this morning, reading on MI3, an interview you did with them, you mentioned that revenue is up in the past couple of years. Looking at LinkedIn, the numbers in staffing are down slightly, 11% over the 2 years. How does that kind of factor in with each other, revenue being up, but I guess staffing down?
Look, so we've managed the business pretty tightly. The revenue growth in 2021, we're really proud of. We've been able to find extra capacity in some teams without necessarily having to impinge on their life. And having them to work harder. We've just found capacity and streamlining in the business that have allowed us to take on new clients without having to take on headcount in the same proportion. So, that's where the result has come from. The other thing that we spent a lot of time on in 2021 was finding balance for our team. You know, the ability for them to come and work hard and achieve and learn and satisfy their clients and answer all the challenges that clients put in front of you. We've been acutely focused on that, but at the same time, we've been focused on better work-life balance and better support of our team to deliver those results. I couldn't be prouder of every person that makes up CHEP today.
And just finally, I guess, on a sort of related note in terms of talent, Clemenger Group more generally has seen quite a few changes in the last couple of years. Do you think with this it's sort of a refreshed opportunity and a sort of clean slate moving forward for the group?
Look, I'm challenged to run CHEP the best way possible. There's lots of great initiatives going on at a group-wide level. If there's ideas that we share back and forth, that's great. But as each of the brands run in their own right, that's probably a better question for the individual CEOs. But we're very collaborative at a CGL level, but my focus is fairly and squarely on CHEP and how we drive CHEP forward.
Brilliant. Well, Justin, appreciate you coming on at short notice today. It's been great to chat.
Absolute pleasure. Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Coming up next, a refreshed TV ratings year kicks off. With the TV ratings year kicking off last week, our very own Emma Shepherd went to three free-to-air networks, speaking with Nine's Michael Stevenson, Ten's Rod Prosser, and Seven's Kurt Burnett about the year ahead, strategy, and what to expect. This also comes with while the ratings systems themselves are in flux, moving towards a more total representation of things with the increasing usage of broadcast video on demand and live streaming to view primetime programming. Nine and Seven both, as we've previously discussed on here, claimed what they see as important wins across 2021. But Seven's Burnett told Mumbrella in the article which I referenced before that this year it aims to grow in the 25 to 54 category. Now, does this suggest maybe that Seven is admitting that it lost out last year on maybe what it does see as the most important category?
So I don't think it's a case of quality over quantity. For the networks, I think this has been a big topic for the industry for a long time now, in particular Seven, which, you know, for the most part, the last, 5 to 6 years has always focused on, older demographics and female predominantly. Even I did speak to Steve Allen from PMN earlier today. He did mention that, around 85% of TV marketplace goes to demographics 16 to 54s. They're the ones that the, brands are the most interested in kind of cracking and reaching. And I think that Seven is, you know, still very much, you know, focused on older and female. However, they are this year trying to attract, you know, the 25 to 54s, which Nine did kind of win last year. So, you know, what they're doing about that and how they're doing this is, you know, revamping some of their tentpole programs, such as The Voice. So they had the one last week that went for 1 week, the Voice Generations. Now, that reformat was basically just designed to, you know, bring in the younger demographics, and obviously for the rest and throughout 2022, they're definitely going to pepper in some new content as well, just to bring in some of that younger audience, which they haven't had previously, which Nine kind of excels so well. Like, they just do so well. You know, Nine, as we've seen, their content slate really does appeal to the 25 to 54 demos. You know, that's always been their focus. So I think, you know, it's inevitable that Seven's focusing on something that they see as, you know, a growth for them as a network. So, you know, only time can tell.
Yeah, and straight out the block, each of the networks have had their own tentpole programming competing against each other. Em, you mentioned there The Voice Generations. Kicking off last week, we had Maths on 9, which always does well, and Survivor on 10. Personally, I'm watching Survivor, but how are they each faring so far?
Yeah, look, as expected, I'm sure, in the industry, that, you know, Maths for 9 has done incredibly well. Since its launch last week, it has topped entertainment every night. We have seen a pretty consistent Survivor following, and I think that's also pretty predictable as well. You know, that cult following, that fan, you know, the fan base that's surrounding that format for 10 is just, it's really, really positive for them. And then, you know, we did see that the spin-off series, The Voice Generations, which, you know, they were trying to grab that younger audience, that has done exactly that. However, it didn't really pull in as much of an audience as I would have thought for them. But, you know, it was only really to go up against Maths and Survivor. And, you know, they're really kind of focused on the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics at the moment. And their, you know, actual tentpole voice will start at the end of the year. So, you know, all in all, pretty good in terms of free-to-air audience share. And Married at First Sight is definitely a clear winner at this stage.
So I guess looking forward, what should we be kind of keeping our eye on? And what are buyers really looking out for this year, Banksy?
It's a tricky one, Callum. I've been talking with Em about this quite a bit. I think media buyers aren't really that much focused on BVOD at this stage. I think all the big numbers are with FTA, and that's where they're kind of working out where their money's going. I think Em will probably agree with me that once those BVOD numbers and audience increase and the FTA drops off, what do you reckon, Em? Probably soon, or how soon do you reckon?
Definitely. You know, as I previously mentioned, and Steve Allen previously mentioned to me that, you know, it's all about the 16 to 54s. And in terms of, you know, media buyers, you know, brands come to them to obviously place the ads. They're looking for that big, you know, the biggest audience share that they can get. And they want those big shows as well. And I think the numbers at the moment, as much as everyone wants to move towards total TV reporting, I think it's very much still about free to air. That's where the majority of the audience share are. And I think, you know, with the BVOD numbers, they are definitely creeping up. I just don't think that at this point of time, you know, it's a focus with the media buyers as of yet, because from what I have been told by a few media buyers, if you want to advertise your brand on BVOD, it's a completely separate transaction. They don't actually, you know, sometimes there's a package deal when it comes, you know, with Maths or shows like that do really well. But most of the time, BVOD is a separate transaction to, you know, if you'd want to advertise free-to-air.
And I guess last year at the upfronts, we saw those networks kind of quite a few of them rolling out new tech for those buying platforms on more digital or BVOD viewing. And we would assume going forward, as the way everything is, things are moving online, that people will increasingly start watching through those channels. Does this mean that we will potentially be changing the way that we report on TV ratings? I know right now the main daily article that we put forward is just the kind of free-to-air linear.
Yeah, look, Callum, I think at this stage, you know, we can focus on total TV reporting only unless we have the access to the BVOD figures and not just the Oztam FTA linear overnight ratings and then the seven-day BVOD and VOZ, which is 2 weeks behind. So it gets a bit complicated, I think, once you look at it from that point of view of reporting. Em's doing a really good job of keeping on top of how that process works and really monitoring it with Oztam, you know, of any changes coming through. So, yeah, I think we can't base our figures off numbers that's not provided to us through Oztam Direct at this stage. So, yeah, Em will agree. I think that's where we are.
Yeah, basically, if it's not from Oztam or third party, we don't really want to rely on the data that the networks give us. So unless we have that extra information and that, you know, reliability of an external source, then we at this stage can't report BVOD overnight.
Coming up next, I'll be chatting to It's Friday's Pete Bozulkovsky. Pete Bozulkovsky, CEO and founder of new startup creative agency It's Friday. Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast.
Thanks, Callum. Good to be here.
Great to have you. So you've just struck out on your own after a stretch of a few different roles, first finishing up your time at Leo Burnett, then joining YNR soon after becoming VML YNR, and then Clemenger BBDO Sydney, which you finished up at the end of 2021. Why is now the time to go on your own?
It's COVID. Why not? That's a very good question. I think you go into this industry and it's so electric and magical and you you get entrusted with these amazing brands and then you work in organizations that have got, you know, very clear point of view of how they manage brands. And don't know, you know, it's years of working with amazing people that you always in the back of your mind, you've kind of, I've always thought, wouldn't it be great if we could start something? Wouldn't it be great to actually have no obstacles in the way, but just, you know, create an entity and offering that you truly believe in? And, you know, I think all those roads, all those years have led to this, you know, to really firm up your point of view. I think you need, you know, and some folks who are very early on in their career and are blazing successes. For me, I've really enjoyed learning more about different organizations and the way they sort of view the world and how they manage brands. And so it just felt it was the time. You know, it had nothing to do with the Great Resignation or anything like that. but I have to say, you know, the first lockdown that we had in 2020, we kept going in the office, so there was only a few of us. So really, it was business as usual for us. And the second one, there was having to work from home because Gladys made you work from home, which was a good thing. You know, stay safe. But I don't think I've ever had that point of time to reflect. I know it might sound silly, but you know, you kind of 20 odd years of, you know, going in it at 100 miles an hour, loving what you do. But, you know, the only time you've got a break is holidays, whatever. But this was a real point of reflection. And I've never had that before. You know, you do stop here and there to sort of think, you know, hang on, where am I going? Is this the right place or should I need another challenge? I don't mean any of that. I mean, what do I really want? And I think the 4 or 5 months of not being in an office where and you're not constantly, you're in a lot of meetings, but you've got time to yourself. And I think that was the trigger of, okay, I feel like this time is right. It was serendipity. And, you know, with some of my partners who were kind of feeling the same way and we felt, well, you know, this is the time. We've got to we've got this passion to do it, and fear is something that always kind of gets in the way. And I had this quote up, which was, everything you want is on the other side of fear. But yeah, you know, there's one thing of wanting to do it, another thing of actually doing it. We felt like this is the time. I know it's crazy, but there's a few indies who have started during this period too. So I don't know, maybe we're all crazy, but it just felt right. I can't explain it. It just felt right. It was a feeling that just felt right, and we knew what we wanted to do, and we thought, okay, we're going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that a few other ones have started up in COVID, and you kind of joked about COVID at the start. You've now gone out with, you said, your partners, Jeremy Davilliers and Vince Ligana. There are a few of those agencies. We won't go into them because obviously there are quite a few. But what is going to, I guess, differentiate your agency? And, or should I rephrase that and say, why are you going to, or should you be taken seriously in comparison to these other startups? And kind of on that, do you think that this is kind of the way the wind is blowing? We're going to continue seeing this outside the context of COVID?
It's a great question in terms of we've done it because we're going to run our own race, and it's not necessarily about what the Jones are doing, or, you know, it's not about keeping up with them. And, it, you know, there are brilliant companies out there, indies and multinationals. So brilliant. We have 10 years of working together in various different organizations, and we've just got this sort of similar ambition to do a certain type of innovative work. And I think that sort of experience and that ambition of wanting to sort of carve out our own point of view in the market, that point of view is that, you know, I think what you learn is there are many, many buzzwords out there and many offerings in there. But, you know, the reason for the name of It's Friday is predicated on this, on the ethos that, you know, during the week, it's a day that people really look forward to. It has a feeling, it has an energy, and that energy is driven by anticipation, positivity, optimism. And the reason for that is because the days leading up to it, it's a bit of a grind, and, you know, you're kind of getting through the week, and then comes Friday and you've got something to look forward to, and you're very optimistic. Those days leading up kind of deplete your energy levels, and so it comes Friday, you're jolted. And the way we kind of see the world is that it's very similar to brands, you know. So brands that, you know, compete in a lot of markets, a lot of categories, there's a lot of competition, whether that is innovation in price, innovation in product, in service. And then what tends to happen is they kind of lose their differentiation. It's about how do you sort of restore that energy on a brand, because, you know, without an energy, it's hard for consumers to remember that interaction that they've had with you, or want to remember, because you're effectively wrestling with time. And so very simple, basic principle. And, you know, how do you inject and power a brand with energy? And that for us may feel simplistic, but it's how we're going to sort of carve our view of the world in the market. And when you look at the amount of brands that operate in many different categories and many different spaces, you kind of look at that, and you look at some of those brands who don't have that energy, who don't leave you feeling with anything. There's no emotion. There's no distinction. There's no, you know, they're not connecting with you in a meaningful way. Everything for us, all roads lead to energy beats everything. Us as humans, our view of the world and how we power brands. And I'll tell you, I've got an example, and it was a great example that was done overseas. And it was a billboard at an airport, and it was in Helsinki, and it was one of those airport signs that welcomes you to the country or to the state. How many of those do you see? A lot. You know, welcome to London, welcome to Sydney. Great. Ace. however, this one kind of hit me between the eyes, and it read, nobody in their right mind would come to Helsinki in November. Except you badass, welcome. Now, if that doesn't make you feel something, if you know that you can feel the energy of that tourism body, like of that country, it says a lot about the values of that country. And you take a photo and you share it with someone, you want to talk about it because it's made you feel good. You may not share it instantly, but it's something that you do remember. Brands are getting complacent. And you know, I think there is an opportunity to re-energize those brands and in the least suspecting channels as well. You know, not all channels are created equal. So how do we make sure that when brands turn up all the time that we're using differentiation as a way of being able to connect with consumers in a more memorable way? And I think that's what energy allows us to do.
Yeah. And I guess speaking about brands, you know, your first foundation, well, your foundation client is Domino's. Was there anything particular, I mean, how did that partnership come about? And did they kind of, was it a natural marriage where they're looking for what you're talking about there, that kind of brand energy? And
Domino's is one of the most inspiring brands, and not that I'm biased, but if you think about what they have managed to achieve and do in this market through innovation, they created, they put the customer at the heart of everything that they do, and they innovated to crush the barriers that got in the way to delivering a superior service. And you know, they launched their pizza tracker before Uber was even created. And, you know, that sort of, you know, step changing how the category orders takeaway food, and they kept doing it and kept doing it. And so a brand that's fueled with innovation, you know, it's one of the top ASX companies in this country. And, you know, a lot of it has been invested in the product. And for us, that sort of, there's been a natural pairing of values of wanting to partner up with a brand that has that sort of zest to keep crushing conventions, to ensure that whenever the brand appears in the world and how it comes into contact with consumers, it's done in a very differentiated way. And if you meet Adam Ballesty, who's the CMO, or, you know, Don May, who's the global CEO, they both sing and talk out of the same hymn sheet. You know, there's this natural energy to want to, you know, disrupt and innovate and crush those things that get in the way. And, you know, they were looking for a partner that could apply that thinking to the brand across the entire customer journey. I think our values of energizing a brand where they're a business that, you know, does everything that they can to provide that amazing customer experience for its food or its service offering. You know, I think it was just a natural connection. You know, it's a phenomenal business. And we're very lucky that they have afforded us the opportunity, really, to be our founding client. And our founding partner to get It's Friday off the ground.
Yeah. And in terms of the agency, or maybe the ecosystem more generally, this is a bit of a change of pace, but as we've seen in the past couple of years within COVID, within these kind of agencies that have come up, or, you know, you've got Howitson Company, formerly White, Aidan Hepburn's Accello, the market does tend to lend itself, along with your agency, to, I guess, we're seeing predominantly males striking out on their own. Do you think there's any sort of conditions in the market that do lend itself to that? And do you think in the future we might see more females who are in those kind of prominent roles kind of striking out on their own?
Yeah, I think that's a terrific question. Look, finding partners, business partners, they're probably the most important decision you make. So as it happens, we are three blokes. You know, it's three blokes that have been together for about 10 years. And, you know, we have sort of that shared ambition. That component for our business, we're about to just make an announcement this week. Another executive leader you know, for us, which is really important around ensuring that we are bringing the most diverse minds into the company, it is something that, you know, will be critical for the future and success of It's Friday, that it's, you know, a company that's filled with eclectic, diverse minds. And to answer your question about the business, I hope it does. You know, I've got two daughters who are 8 and 12, and, I want them to be entrepreneurial. You know, my wife has a phenomenal business that was ravaged by COVID, but, you know, she's an entrepreneur and she has her own business. So I kind of, you know, the business only thrives and gets better if there's more diverse businesses out there and also diverse leaders. So, I think the time is ripe, you know.
Yeah.
But I always come back to, you know, just making sure that you're going into business with people that you're sure that, you know, it's gonna be exciting, and there'll be highs and there'll be lows, and you got to put a lot of faith and trust behind your partners.
Yeah. And then I guess talking about the highs and lows of the past couple of years and the conditions that have brought you to the moment we're at now, where you are starting up your own agency, it'd be great to get a few reflections from you from, you know, as we listed earlier, the past three agencies that you've kind of been at in recent years. You finished up at Clem's, your most recent role, a couple of months ago. I guess traditionally in the market, Clemenger is sort of seen as the younger agency in the two and the kind of Melbourne-Sydney dynamic. I'd love to know what your reflections of what the kind of reality of that situation was, being inside of Clemenger and in the kind of wider Clemenger group.
Clemenger is an amazing organisation. I mean, Clemenger as a whole. And, you know, it's a business that has been fiercely competitive and really driven by creativity, and they've never deviated from that. So I think the support, the services, the access to resource was second to none. And Sydney was a business that was, you know, was afforded that opportunity. I think we achieved amazing things in the 2 years. You know, I joined literally just before COVID started. Without their support, you could have sort of retracted in terms of the vision and sort of the ambition that we had for the business. But what was astonishing in that type of organization, you just had so many diverse and inspiring leaders that came at the business world from a very different perspective, and through the different organizations. So you apply that, you get inspired by that, and you apply it to the Sydney operation. And I think, you know, over that 2 years, we kind of, you know, started and the business is now going onto a great trajectory. The momentum was definitely heading north, you know. I think we ended 2021 on top of the new business ladder. Yeah. We were, you know, innovating with the type of work. We were featured in the AFR Most Innovative Companies list. So the business itself and the brand has come a long way, and that's because we gave a lot of young talent an opportunity to step up and to step into those roles, because it's that type of organization. So it's a phenomenal force. It's a big force, and it's a big organization across, you know, Australia and New Zealand. So it was very fond. I had an amazing time with great support there.
And I guess within the wider kind of Clemenger group structure, there's been quite a lot of, well, restructuring in terms of talent in the last couple of years. Do you think that's kind of affected the business in any way, or business as usual? And I guess another one would be, you know, with previously, before you joined, Nick Garrett being in, I guess, across both Melbourne and Sydney. Do you ever see that role kind of becoming a singular role, and maybe the agencies brought together in a more kind of CHE proximity type fashion?
So if I answer your question, I think the brands are bigger than the people. I think everyone has a role in imprinting their legacy and their piece in the bigger puzzle. And, you know, I think everyone kind of contributes to where the business is at today, across all the different brands within the Clemenger Group. So it historically has been a business that has attracted the best talent in the industry, and I think it will continue to do so. So, you know, I think whether the journey has been short or long in terms of those leaders doesn't really matter, because I think they add to the culture and the DNA of the organization, and it'll keep growing, you know. I think Peter Clemenger, who's still part of the business, been with the business for 70 odd years. So, there's a lot of stewardships and knowledge that's still in the business. But I think fresh new blood in any organization is great, a different perspective, a different view. So that business will continue to flourish with different leaders.
Yeah. And then I guess before that, there was, well, you joined what was YNR, then turned and merged with VML, which was headed up by Aidan, who you subsequently co-CEO'd with. I'd love to find out, what, you know, with that, when you came into the job, were you aware of that happening, kind of bringing the agencies together? And how do you think it turned out after, I guess, the time when you left the agency?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Look, it was a different brief to what I took on.
Yeah.
And it was a very different brief to when I joined. So, and I think ultimately, you know, what I've learned in my time, in the 20-odd years in this industry, is that, you know, I've been fiercely loyal to a lot of organizations, you know, between, I mean, Leah Burnett, I was there for nearly 11 years. But, you know, instinctively, I think what you learn is if it doesn't feel right and it doesn't align to what you've signed up for, you're better off, you know, leaving. And that was the option that I took because yeah. it wasn't the brief that I signed up for. Again, you know, a great time for that organization, some great leaders. Aidan, you know, is a great guy, very smart guy, very successful in his venture out of the multinational. So great talent. But for me personally, it just wasn't the brief that I took on, and we parted ways.
Yeah, and, you know, as a result, Aidan, as you mentioned, left. He's started up on his own Accelo. Beforehand, you had these two agencies, YNR, a kind of legacy agency, and VML, both doing well in their own right. Do you think the kind of increasing trend of these mergers and kind of mishmashes of agencies is healthy for the actual agency ecosystem?
Oh, you're asking all the great questions, Callum. You're asking the great questions. It's crystal ball stuff. Look, it's hard to give a broad answer to that, because I think it comes down to the organization, and I think it really comes down to the leadership that are driving, you know, the change. And in some instances, we've seen businesses that have merged together, and in other instances where they haven't. So I think the answer is going to be time will tell.
Yeah,
like these are organizations, and the ones that you're referring to, organizations that have been around for a very long time, you know, they've stood on their own two feet. So in terms of, you know, will they be far more powerful and magnetic in the market when you combine them? Time will tell. I think it's too early. I think yeah. really too early. I don't think the answer is no, they shouldn't. I think time will tell. I think that's the ultimate test, isn't it?
And I guess just finally, Pete, it would be great, you know, after all these years within these groups running agencies across these ones that we've mentioned, if you were to take one learning and apply it to It's Friday going forward, what would you say?
The one learning?
I mean, you can choose more than one if you've got, you know, a few on the top of your mind.
Okay. So I have been very fortunate to have worked in several organizations that have their own unique culture, their own unique view of the world. And I think the one learning, I'm going to put it down to two, really. One that I've learned is how important the culture of the organization really is. Because when you go from one to the other, you know, they're all different and they're all kind of distinctive in their own right. But what you really learn is those organizations that have got their culture, when it's visceral and it's special and it's not words on a page, but, you know, people live those values day in, day out, it makes the place far more magical. It attracts better talent. It attracts the right type of client who's willing to do the kind of work that you want to do. And it's also a reflection of the work you put out into the world. And I think that culture is so important. And I think I've learned that, you know, with the different organizations, when it's not there, how much you actually lose. And, you know, I think, wasn't there a famous saying, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast? I think that is so true. The second point I will say, the second learning, is that the work that the brand, based on its culture, the type of work that it puts out really defines the organization. And those organizations that aren't willing to define the kind of work that they do, they get caught in the middle. And I think it's those that I've seen, that learning for us is, you know, we want to be defined by the kind of work we create. And I think that is what will ensure that the brand will be here in 10 years' time, in 20 years' time, fingers crossed. And they're the defining things that I take from my experience in having worked in some of the, you know, great creative companies that we will inject into It's Friday.
Well, I can't wait to see the work you end up producing, Pete, and what comes out of It's Friday this year. It's been absolutely brilliant having you on the podcast. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks, Callum.
And that's it for this week's Mumbrellacast. Please remember or make sure to subscribe to the Mumbrellacast on your favourite podcast platform, and keep checking Mumbrella for more content and updates. Emma and Banksy, thank you.
Thanks, Callum.
Thanks very much.
See you, Emma.
And thanks to Justin Hind and Pete Bozakowski for joining us. See you next week.